You're listening to the Live Free Now podcast, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. And now your host, John Bush. Hey there, welcome to the Live Free Now show, Live Free Now podcast. Check out livefreenow.show. We are streaming live on the Conscious Resistance Network, as well as my personal Facebook and the Live Free Now YouTube channel. And today we're joined by none other than Nick Reed, the one, the only. Good friend of mine, all around swell guy. And I recently did a video, you can find it in the feed, on the Black Lives Matter movement and how things are just so polarized lately, and how there's so much division. And in that video, I encouraged people to first seek to understand before they seek to be understood, which is one of the 7 habits of highly effective people from Stephen Covey's awesome book. And Nick appreciated that video. It's in line with the message that he likes to promote, which is all about compassion and finding common ground and avoiding this hardcore division, trying to have a conversation. He's a good conversationalist, as you'll soon find out. So we're just going to talk about America being super polarized nowadays with the COVID stuff, the Black Lives Matter, left, right politics. And then we are going to riff on what we can do about it to try to find a little more peace in our discussion. We are going to be taking your questions and comments as well, serious comments and questions for you trolls out there. So feel free to comment in the section. We'll try to keep up with them. And yeah, Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great, John. Right. I appreciate you having me on to talk about this topic.
Yeah, it's important.
It is. So I also want people to know that really there's a lot you can do, and we're going to actually talk about some solutions and some mental models that can help in being able to advance the causes that you care about, as well as have some of the conversations that you want to have, especially with people that you disagree with.
So people can be more effective in achieving their goals.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a single person on this earth who doesn't have something that they care about that they'd like to advance. And so how do you do that when today trying to talk to anybody about anything is almost impossible because you're put on the other side of some large fence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's either this or that. It's either black or white. And I think as human beings, we're all unique. There's a lot of gray area. And so when we can find that common ground, we can work together. One of my mentors would always say, find shared value based on shared values. So I think that's something we could chat about. Maybe real quick, you could just introduce yourself to the audience, what you're all about, some of your background.
Sure. So my name is Nick Reed, and I work for the Americans for Prosperity Foundation on the content team. And we do some public speaking as well as creating some online content that hopefully will be soul shifting and inspire people to a new vision of the world, and specifically with more freedom instead of less. And we're developing also a capability in facilitating civil dialogue and deliberation to bring people of opposing viewpoints together to have conversations, not only to create understanding, but to create the nuanced thinking that enables people to move forward with bottom-up rather than top-down solutions and get past a lot of the false choices that people face today.
I appreciate that nuanced thinking, because when people are just divided and they instantly go back to their program on a topic, like Trump comes up or masks come up, like some of the commenters are saying, and then they, rather than thinking about it critically with an open mind and weighing all the different positions and thinking about something from someone else's perspective, God forbid people do that, they just instantly go revert to the program, what they heard on MSNBC, what they heard the experts say, what Fauci said, or what the conservative pundit said. I think that's a big problem. Why don't you just maybe paint a picture on what some of the big polarizing topics there are today, because things are just as polarized as they've ever been in my lifetime. But what do you think are some of those big ticket items that are causing a lot of division?
Sure. You mean beyond elections and
beyond elections?
Because
yeah,
that goes without saying is one of the most divisive things in our culture today. But of course, people are polarized over race. People are polarized over the environment. People are polarized over cronyism and corporate welfare. People are polarized over immigration. People are polarized over abortion. And there's always these two camps. And one camp is saying something like, these people are just always just a bunch of greedy bastards trying to do each other in all the time, right? And the other camp is saying, no, these are entrepreneurs who are creating value for society by innovating products and services that improve people's lives. And one camp is saying these are a bunch of baby killers and murderers. And the other camp is saying these are people trying to strip away our individual rights to our own bodies. And what we're left with is a false choice where people can't talk about COVID and what to do about something that's perceived to be a very big threat in a nuanced way, because the game that we're playing doesn't enable real thinking, because it doesn't enable free speaking. And so I would think of speaking and thinking as synonymous. And the less people are able to actually talk freely about these things and learn from each other, the less people are able to actually think freely about these things. Let me ask you this, John. When you get into conversation with people that you know you already agree with, who think just like you, who share the same viewpoint and ideology, same background life experiences, how much can you really learn from someone like that versus somebody from a completely different viewpoint who completely disagrees with you maybe on something?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, if we already have the same worldview and in large part the same life experiences, I guess there's opportunity to get into the nitty gritty and finer points, which I think a lot of folks in the libertarian movement like to do. They agree on 99.9% of things, but they focus their energy on debating about that 0.1%. But I do believe that there's definitely a lot more to learn and there's a lot more to teach when you're engaging with people that don't have those life experiences and that don't have the same worldview. And if you come to those opportunities with an open mind, which I often fail to do because I feel I'm pretty firm in my position. And one of my biggest ethics, most important ethics, is freedom. I think with the foundation of freedom, then it enables people to flourish. And something I want to talk about also is how with a foundation for freedom or a social organization that allows freedom of choice, there wouldn't be so much division, because what we have now is this one size fits all top down. When this group is in power, they force their views on everyone else against their will. But regardless, I do find it more valuable, but I even struggle myself to not come to the table trying to force my view on someone or trying to persuade someone, which I try to focus on seeking first to understand and then to be understood.
John, that distinction was so spot on when you shared that last time. It's actually the whole reason that I'm here, is because that is so key. And I've shared it multiple times, even between when you gave that talk and introduced that point and now, because when people talk today, they're not speaking to anybody. We're speaking at people. And the difference is that you speak to people, you speak at Siri, but people are not objects. And when you start to relate to people as if they are objects, you run into not only a risk to your liberties, because objects don't have rights, but you run into a situation where you're going to invite the very thing that you're trying to avoid. You invite it. And let me give you a case in point. So I used to volunteer at the domestic violence hotline, and there was a mom who called in one day, and she was talking about her daughter who was in an abusive relationship. And she asked me this question. She said, how is it that somebody can say some of the things or do some of these things to another person? And it dawned on me that sometimes we don't see another person. What we see is more akin to an object or a possession. And you can take an object, throw it on the ground and stomp on it right now. I mean, you would never think of yourself as being abusive or as a murderer or violating that object's rights. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any intrinsic value apart from its use to me. Yeah. And this is all like, you know, it's not that big a deal when you're talking about, you know, objects. But when you're talking about people, it is. Yeah. And if you really want to get deep into it, right, even these objects, the metal that's in this pole right here is part of the metallic ores of a living earth. And so people on the left always complain about how this is we're turning living things into products and resources. And then we complain about how people are being treated like chattel or human resources. But then when you treat people that way, your relationships become just as toxic as your water and air.
Yeah.
Because you're treating something not according to its nature. When a human being is born, we're the most helpless creature on the face of the earth. Why is that?
Because we're a social animal. We have the parents that are there to come in and protect and nurture.
Yeah, it's a lot of nurture. Yeah. I mean, when a bug is born, it can take off in the air and fly right away. Mm-hmm. When a deer is born, it can basically take off on a sprint within minutes.
Yeah.
But when a human being is born, mm-hmm. we're completely helpless. Yeah. And that's because we're born with magnitudes more degrees of freedom. Mm-hmm. The freedom is not just what we do and value. It's who we are. It's in our DNA. All of the action patterns of the actions that we will take are not present and fixed through our heredity at birth. Mm-hmm. For us as human beings, life is an open book. It's an open-ended story for us to fill in, that we get to actually take an active role and participate in the way that things happen. And we can actually show up and be a gift to others or a curse. We can be creative or we can be destructive. And so when we're talking about relating to people as an object, we're talking about violating something's nature to treat somebody as an object. An object is moved by external forces. A person is self-driving and self-organizing and self-reflecting. We move ourselves. You don't move people. You touch people and they move themselves. Yeah. And so when we engage in conversation with people, in a way to where we're trying to convert them or move the needle or any of the other language that we use, win the battle, we're ultimately saying, I don't see you and I don't respect you. And that's what we hear on a really subtle level. And we don't like it when people do that to us.
Yeah.
And recognize that we've come to these conclusions ourselves and have more or less thought about them. And here you are saying that basically the reason I believe what I believe and I'm doing what I'm doing is because of X is the cause of me. What a disservice to who you're talking to. How could you ever be open with another person or have the kind of trusting relationship where a person could even be open to hearing what it is that you have to say in the first place? So that's kind of the problem here that I'm saying. And I really don't mean to go on a monologue, John. Sorry, but you really got me going.
My audience hears from me all the time. A couple things popped in my head.
Yeah, what's coming
that
up for you?
There is an effort to dehumanize the other, for example, in times of war. Mm. So if it was just a blank state with two human beings, more than likely, without all this external social influence programming, without this false sense of scarcity that often leads people to war, or leads people to do the bidding of the rulers, people aren't really inclined to engage in violence against one another or kill one another. That's why in order for a nation to lead the people to war, they really need to play up the dehumanization aspect. This is what Hitler did against the Jews and the Gypsies and the Gentiles. It was a propaganda campaign for years and years, decades of dehumanizing this certain group of people. And here in America, we're not exempt from that. It's not some historical thing that took place. We saw it recently with the war on terror. And after 9/11, which I believe was a false flag terror attack, it was used as a means to the end, problem, reaction, solution. So the problem was terror, fear, the reaction of the American public, which was a guided reaction, was, wow, we need our government, our patriarchal government, to protect us and to go out in the Middle East and fight these terrorists. And the solution, of course, is the war on terror and also the growth of the police state at home. But if you were paying attention during that time with discernment rather than just being programmed, then you could see that there was a dehumanization campaign against the other, in this case, Muslims in the Middle East. And unfortunately, a large segment of the population really bought into that and kind of made it their fighting creed. And there was a lot of xenophobia that just expanded. A lot of people had that in their internally already, and they just had an outlet now to express it and to be frustrated about it. Incidentally, we also see that happening. And it's all based on ignorance, where like Asian Americans were being targeted when COVID started popping off, right? And maybe Trump contributes to that, calling it the Chinese virus, for example. One thing that also popped in is you mentioned how infants are like a blank slate and we have the freedom to chart our own course, right? Well, we do have that innate freedom, and that's a very beautiful thing. However, one of the problems that we face, and consequently, one of the reasons why we are so polarized today, is because of that freedom, which is simultaneously a gift, it's also can be weaponized against us. And there, I was just watching a documentary put out by Richard Grove. I think it's called State of Mind. It's all about mass manipulation, social engineering, public relations, Edward L. Bernays, all this stuff, the Tavistock Institute, these foundations like the Rockefellers are especially responsible for a lot of it. They recognize that human beings have that blank slate, so to speak. They're not just like carrying out the instinctual program of an animal. We have that as well in our reptilian brain, but we also have that capacity for greatness and for our own creative expression, but it can be easily manipulated. And hopefully one of the things that we can bring to the audience today, and I think many of the audience are already critical thinkers, but we all can do our work. We ourselves can do our work, is to be cautious of that external manipulation that plays out. The mainstream media is a big part of it. Public schooling is a big part of it. Even the social programming from your family when you grow up. And one of the tools, if I can just share a tool or tactic that really helped with me, is mindfulness. I like that the Buddha's back here on my videos nowadays, because I always reference him. And I always try to be like the Buddha, right? What would Jesus do? It's also what would Siddhartha do, right? So he talked about how through mindfulness, we can become aware of what's taking place in the present moment and act of it or not act of it without any response, with just being present, without the thoughts, without our programming played out. And when you can adopt that mindfulness through the practice of meditation, it could be walking meditation, it could be sitting, it could be practicing with your breath, you can become mindful of that internal voice track in your head. And this allowed me to become a better father, to become a better partner with my girlfriend, to become a better business person. So if you can become mindful of that soundtrack, you can catch it. And so I'm talking about the inner voice, the monologue that we have. Really, it's a dialogue, because there's like a subconscious thought and there's a conscious thought. And oftentimes that track that's playing in our head, it isn't productive. It's not beneficial. And it's really the track can be influenced from your parents, like your mom, for example, and people around you saying that you need to work harder, you're not doing good enough. And now with all the COVID stuff, the track can be the mainstream media, which leads you to be like, wow, that guy just walked real close to me. I feel afraid. I don't want to be around other human beings. So if you can be mindful of that track, you can actually take control of that inner monologue, that soundtrack in your head. And instead of thinking, maybe I shouldn't make this expansion of my business, I feel insecure about it, I don't know if it'll be a success, you can program it to be like, no, I'm in a great place right now. I'm aligned with abundance. I know that if I make this move, while there are risks involved, it's going to be successful. Or I know that even though in the past I've had issues with anger, that's not really who I am. So I'm going to take a pause. And back to the 7 habits of highly effective people. The first one is be proactive, where he points out there's a special moment in between stimulus and response. This little space is where we can capture the moment, where we can be mindful, and we can take ownership of how we show up in the world. And so that's really what's coming to me. So there is programming. We are free beings that have our own creative ability to carry out our life and our destiny. But all throughout life, whether it's a government conspiracy top down, whether it's our parents, whether it's the media, whether it's bullies, or whether it's friends that weren't really friends that created all this doubt, we can intercept that message and we could shift it to one that brings about more greatness in our life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm.
Super glad you shared that message. There's so much in there that I wanted to touch on that's coming up for me. I think one of the biggest things that you're bringing up right now for me is the different tracks that are playing in our head,
mm-hmm.
the different, what I would call stories or,
yeah.
or myths that are kind of in the deep back of our mind that kind of underlie our behavior like a mindset does. And I think there's underneath what's happening in Floyd, what's happening in COVID, what happened in the Parthiad and what happened in Germany and all the things that you're talking about is a really common narrative. And the narrative is that there's an evil out there and we just have to pinpoint it, identify it, and eradicate it. And then everything is going to be better. And if that's a person or whether that's a virus, as long as it's something identifiable that we can take out, we feel like we know what to do.
We have a mission.
If there's no enemy out there, or if, say, the enemy is also a potentiality within ourselves, like Carl Jung believed, was accused of being a Nazi sympathizer because he refused to subscribe to the idea that there's such a thing as a categorically evil person who doesn't also have the potential for good and evil as a free person, then we don't know what to do. And so I think that we need to start looking at this story, right? And because if you look, the numbers get fudged in order to heighten kind of the fear of the enemy because of this narrative that we're seeing. Like in COVID, right, you see the potential cases that are getting added to the cases, and then everybody gets worried. We were just talking about how Greg Abbott, he looked and he said, well, we have over 220 counties in Texas, and there's only a handful that have any cases, so I'm not going to have an economic shutdown over this. And then the health department started adding potential cases, right? Well, that creates a new situation. So after 9/11, right, when they created the enemy as the terrorist, right, mm-hmm. which is the new boogeyman or the communist, they started including also potential terrorists in the definition of terrorists. So not just a terrorist is a magic word that if you get called this name, you lose all your rights. But not just terrorists. Potential terrorists mm-hmm. as well lose all of their rights. And this is part of the same, let's build a big boogeyman thing.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wants to be on that camp, right? Everybody has to identify with the good guys for ultimate fear of losing all their rights or whatever the ultimate fear is, right?
Antifa is one of those boogeymen that Trump builds up right now.
What's that? Tell me more.
The anti-fascist movement, right?
Yeah,
Antifa,
yeah.
This loose leaf organization of people that are left anarchists. Some of them are communists. And there are these people that exist. But because Trump pounds up and because a lot of right pundits really play up the Antifa, it's led. And it's like the other. It's this big boogeyman that people have created. Not to say that that organization or movement doesn't exist and they don't cause harm, but because of that focus, like you were saying, on building up this other that we need to eradicate, it caused a whole group of people to view the entirety of the BLM movement or of protesters that are fighting for police accountability as Antifa, as communists, as violent potential agitators. And it also empowered
right.
a lot of people to be supportive of the Department of Homeland Security sending paramilitary forces into local communities in order to put down the Antifa folk.
Yeah. What were they called in the Parthiad, I believe it was, to dehumanize the enemy? Cockroaches? Yeah. In war, they call people enemy combatants.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, when you go into a capital case, you see that there's this game that happens between the prosecutor and defending attorney
mm-hmm.
where the defending attorney is always trying to portray the accused as human, and the prosecuting attorney is always trying to portray them as a monster.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to kill a monster. It's hard to kill a human.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very, very interesting here. Let me tell you why. So today, we are more divided, I believe, in this country than we have been since the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that people don't want their kids to grow up and marry somebody who voted for the other guy. Legislators sign on to bad legislation if it's proposed by their team's party, and they refuse to sign on to good legislation if it's proposed by someone of the opposite party. People unfriend each other on Facebook if they disagree with them or express any challenge to their ideas, and surround themselves with a bubble that reinforces their cognitive bias. And the problem is not that people disagree. The problem is not that people think that people they disagree with are wrong or incorrect. The problem is that we're actually starting to believe that they're bad people, that they're evil, they're lazy, they're stupid. And this is a different phenomenon than we've ever experienced. And this is what has to happen in the war mindset in order to do what you're going to do to the enemy. And there's a psychology here, actually. So in developmental psychology, if you notice, when a baby is born, right, we were born in total dependency. Mm-hmm. Mother is food, warmth, shelter, protection, everything. And then we learn to crawl and to walk and to talk, and we gain independence.
Mm-hmm.
But as we gain independence, we also gain separation, right? Our relationship has changed. We're no longer in symbiosis.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do not learn, this is what all the psychoanalytical research shows, to form a new way to relate to the world and others in a productive, healthy way,
mm-hmm.
then we develop this prison of isolation and a separation anxiety that can drive us mad. It can literally drive us mad to do all sorts of things to get rid of that. And this is what happens when we come into conflict at a developmental level with the other, and we become estranged or alienated from the world and others. And we have to learn through love, through compassion, through just mature development to relate in a positive way. But we don't have to. And the stories that are offered today do not lead you to a mature development. There was I'll come back to that study. So when we get to this point, there's a couple escapes. There's a psychoanalyst and philosopher named Eric Fromm. Eric Fromm talked about the escapes. He called it escape from freedom, actually. Yeah. He said, we can't handle it, and we run from it into dependency again.
Mm-hmm.
And the main ways that we did that was by getting rid of the other.
Okay.
So if you disagree with me, right, and you have a conflict, oh my gosh, I'm confronted with the otherness of you. Well, what if I play the game of who's right, like we do in our culture today when we communicate, where one of us is right and one of us is wrong, and that's it.
Yeah.
So if I win, then I get rid of you or your viewpoint, and there's only mine and my viewpoint and me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Smith from The Matrix. Me, mm-hmm. me, me.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes. Now there's no conflict because there's no you.
Uh-huh.
Or I join the party. I join the nation. I join the ideology, I adopt the belief system, and now there's no me, there's no my viewpoint, there's just that. So there's no conflict anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the separation anxiety is gone. But there's a problem with this, is you never get rid of the other. You never get rid of me or you or difference, and so it's a temporary escape. And the problem is you build a tolerance like a drug, and you need a greater effect each time in order to keep doing this escape. And so what happens is you need to convert more people to your viewpoint. You need to eradicate more of the enemy and the other, or subdue it.
Hmm.
Or you need to lose yourself more and more through conformity and submission. This is psychological sadism and masochism on the intellectual level.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. What's happened today is this has reached its extreme, where today you can't get any greater of a psychological domination and submission. I mean, in the global sphere, what's next after the UN? You got an intergalactic confederation? Like, you can't get any bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you can't conform any more than being a citizen of the world. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can't. And so now we've reached the ultimate fruition, where we've got humanity has to come of age. You know, there was a study where you went around the world and you surveyed people whether they thought humanity was in its infancy, adolescence, adulthood, or elderhood.
Okay.
And everybody says adolescence, which is very telling,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's what everybody says, even though not everybody, but there's some truth to it.
That's what I was thinking in my head when you were listing those choices. I was thinking adolescence.
Mm.
We still have a long ways to go. I hope we don't return back to infancy and just are easily controlled and manipulated. But
so what's next, John?
Well, I'm hoping that – so there's always this paradox that takes place because one of the big game changers now – well, for a while now is technology. So now that we're in the information age, of course, that's even increased those changes at an exponential rate with the advent of the internet and the interconnectivity that comes with that. But even before that, the advent of the industrial age and factories, automobiles, telephone, for example, electricity, it really advanced human progress, human civilization. But now that we have this technology, you know, I'm always thinking, this is how my background since 2002, I've been an activist studying this conspiracy, right? It's a global conspiracy to create a totalitarian, top-down technocracy, dictatorship, right? It's legit. It's only been accelerated.
That's my boogeyman.
It's a boogeyman. That's right. That's the other. But through the technology, this institution, these secret society groups, and just governments in general, are manipulating the public through the technology, through social media, even with what we see taking place with Facebook and like Russian bots and so on and so forth. There's CIA bots as well, and the CIA has control over New York Times and what is it, Operation Mockingbird, I think. And so there's control through the technology, but also the technology is allowing us to see the other. Whereas before, you just learned about what it was like to be an Egyptian or South American through textbooks, right? Or you learn about the great history of America, how these pilgrims came over to the United States and everything was great. And we established this wonderful civilization based on freedom. But then through the internet, you're allowed to do your own research and find that actually that wasn't such a kosher history. There was a lot of nastiness through the internet. You can find, for example, Iran is still being bastardized and propagandized in the media because there's all this effort to go to war with Iran and Libya and Syria, right? We've already knocked off some of them on the list with regime change. Iran is one of them. And so if through tech, through the media, all you see is Iran as the other, but at the same time, and you have propaganda through Fox News, so on and so forth, but at the same time, you have the internet and Twitter and the media, the access to really see that, oh, wow, Iran's actually a pretty advanced culture. And before the United States CIA got involved with the implanting the Ayatollah in the 1953 coup d'etat, Iran was very liberalized and women were walking around without the whole full garb and stuff. So I think what we can do, because we are powerful human beings, is we can do everything we can to encourage people to focus on what we have in common. We're all human beings. And back to the Buddha over here, we all strive in our lives to minimize suffering and increase the amount of happiness that we have in our lives, whether you're Iranian, Chinese, American, Texan, Californian, up in New York City and the Yankees up there in New York. We're all human beings, so I'm hoping that the next shift in human consciousness will be one of greater compassion and greater understanding. But I don't know how that's going to pan out. Yeah. I choose to be hopeful and optimistic because, you know, you and I, the people that are watching, Derek Bros, for example, we're all powerful people and we have a seat at the table to determine how this pans out. So I hope everyone stays active and doesn't get pessimistic and close off because they see all the crazy news and so on and so forth. And we have an active, because we can all play a role in ensuring that that next level of human advancement is one that's towards compassion, peace, liberty, and away from control, despotism, and fear of the other. Let's go to a few comments here. And then
sure.
I'd love to hear more strategies, because I think you got more to share on what we can do to overcome this whole
right.
division
Absolutely.
And stuff. So let's see what some comments are here. Go. We got a lot of people that are, the first comment before we even started the stream was, no, you are wrong. Must go extreme left and extreme right.
Good. A little humor. I love it.
That's what happens, though, all the time, unfortunately. So The masks is another big issue. The maskers, and you got people calling them COVIDiots and sheep. And I did a post recently where it's like, I don't know what the purpose of all this nastiness is on Facebook. Maybe it's like a venting process. But if you're really hoping to win people over, which is what I try to do, I try to persuade people, you're not going to do it by calling people idiots or sheep. So, And here this guy says, don't put on that goofy mask. We are infant gods born to develop infinitely of the divine, unlike all other animals. What do you think about that, Nick?
I think he's trying to touch on the spiritual aspect of this. And I think that it's very good because there's a false choice that's pitted today about people. And that is that we're just a bunch of electrons floating in the void, or we're these like souls encapsulated in some flesh body. It's like you either are with science or you're with religion. And I think this is a big conversation for people. And I think there's two camps on this conversation, just like all the rest of them. And I want to bring up here that Carl Jung spoke of what he called a tension of opposites. And he talked about it as necessary for people who hold two seemingly contradictory viewpoints or principles to be able to sit together and recognize both of them at the same time without losing one or the other. And I think that this is important no matter what the conversation is, whether it's about materiality or spirituality and the divide there or any other false choice. You have to be able to hold two viewpoints in order to be able to move to a third. When you have two viewpoints looking at each other like this, right, you can only see from the vantage point of one point. But when you can hold two, then you move to a third. It's like creating another dimension. And there are possibilities that open up that you can't imagine before. And there are doors that open that are not open before because you literally cannot see past the viewpoint that you don't have. And it has to emerge out of dialogue and conversation with others and seeing through others' eyes. And I can't believe this is relevant, but there's a study done on how accurate people are at guessing jelly beans in a jar. And they found that a person is extremely inaccurate. But when they took an average of all the people's guesses, they found it was uncanny how spot on people are. And I think there is something there that tells us that we need other people to get more near to the truth.
Yeah.
And that me, you know, my viewpoint is valid. My experiences are valid. I am an infinitely unique individual, and yet I live in interdependency with the rest of humanity and with the rest of the ecosystem and the world. And that's two simultaneously contradictory principles. How can you reconcile those? We're all one, and yet we're all individuals and separate beings. Yeah. How is this possible?
Yeah, I love that. That's what our boy, the Buddha, talked about too, with interconnectedness. And it can simultaneously be the whole and the parts. These aren't two distinct things. They're one and the same. And deduced from that is why we ought to have compassion for one another, because we're all the same. And when we are hurting others, we're really hurting ourselves. And there's a lot of insight that you can gain to improve your relationships with others, because a lot of negative things that we do to other people is merely a projection of our internal struggles that we're having, or something, some trauma that we had in our past. I really learned a lot about that having children, right? You have children too. That was a big like, whoa, I got a lot of work to do still. And I realized that our children are just a mirror of us. And I was already imprinting upon them things that I had learned from my parents. Like my dad would do this grunt thing when he would be stressed out or aggravated. And I would do it too. So would my brother. And later, you know, we opened up and we talked to my dad about it. He said his brother would do it and his dad would do it too. And so when I started seeing my daughter do it when she was like two, I was like, whoa, I got to stop doing that little grunt thing. So I did. I stopped doing it. Occasionally I do. But now like my family calls me out and stuff. It's a beautiful thing. But I am my daughter. She is me. I am my dad. He is me. And when you recognize that, You can learn from it, but you can improve upon the situation so the future generation doesn't have to do so much hard work. And that's one thing we tell our kids, like when they're fighting with one another, my daughter will be like, Bill, you're just hurting yourself because I'm you and you're me. And it's especially apparent when you're family, because you literally have the same genetic code, the same DNA. You're like the two parents come together and recreate themselves and have this little synergistic child that's literally them too. But it goes further in that the whole human family, we're all one as well. And then when you can take it even further to have appreciation and love for the earth and for the plants and for the animals, then you can really start to find some peace in the world. Somebody mentioned the Four Agreements, Cheryl Miller, reading the Four Agreements, and it mentions how in times of last war, tactics used to make people scared of one another. That's right. Can you remember the Four Agreements by heart?
Don't take anything personally.
Don't take things personal.
Be impeccable with your word.
With your word.
Never make assumptions.
Don't make assumptions. Somebody help us out with the third.
Anybody got the third?
Toltec knowledge. Don't make assumptions. Be impeccable with your word.
I can't remember.
All right, someone will help us out. It's a great piece of. I think I have it in this little pile of books over here, but
I'll tell you what's interesting about what you're saying.
What do you got?
Is when we look at our kids, right, or when we look at nature, it takes two poles or opposite in order for evolution or creation to happen, right? You need like when you try and go and plant a forest, mm-hmm. you can't just go and plant a bunch of trees, because what makes a forest is the biodiversity.
Yeah.
Like the trees can't just survive in a void.
You can try monocropping, but you have to have all sorts of external interventions which end up causing more problems than good.
Same with people.
Yeah.
Like for every one person to be here, it takes, without the intervention of science, two people to cooperate mm-hmm. on some level, yeah. right? Of the masculine and feminine variety.
Mm-hmm.
So nature also has this tension of opposites. But I think it also shows us that there's an immense creative power in it that emerges once those two come together. And this happens in business when someone from one industry comes over to another and brings all this new innovation and insights that were unimaginable. This happens in relationships. This happens in nature. It happens in almost every aspect of life. So why would it not happen in the political or the cultural, or the social or the racial realms where people today are so afraid of talking to other people? I want to talk about winning people over winning arguments.
Okay.
Can I ask you this, John? Can you win an argument and lose a person?
Uh-huh.
How so?
Well, if you focus so much on winning, first of all, the dichotomy between winning and losing, right? If one's a winner, oftentimes there's a loser on the other side. And I guess someone could push so hard and focus so much on winning that they act in an unkind way, that they don't understand where the other person's coming from. And the person could be turned off by that.
Yeah.
And not want to party with them anymore.
Yeah, well, this issue is not just affecting our culture, our nation, on a political level. It's dividing our dinner tables. It's breaking up families at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
It's breaking up intimate relationships and friendships who are mm-hmm. divided. I saw a post from a neighbor of mine yesterday that said, I just don't think I can date conservatives anymore. And I said, well, I'm a libertarian who married a socialist. So hashtag it's possible. She said, what's that like? I said, well, she takes half my paycheck, but there's great benefits. But that's neither here nor there.
It's pretty funny.
So I think that what people don't understand about the dialogue today, especially what happens in social media conversations with people you don't
great know, place for arguing over your differences, by the way.
Absolutely. The internet has many, many benefits and positives, like the openness and the diversity of ideas that it can bring together instantaneously, right? But there is a lack of these natural social consequences and incentives that are built into a community, mm-hmm. where if you act like a jerk, you wake up and you have to see that person again the next day. Or yeah. even more, like a real community, you actually rely on that person.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation. And that changes it a bit.
Yeah.
And I also don't think that people today can remember or even have ever known very much how important having a certain kind of relationship is with somebody in order to be able to really hear them or to even truly understand what they're saying. And you may be thinking, well, I don't really care. I just want to talk at people. So I got a message and I want to be heard myself. But what you don't understand is I can sit here and speak gobbledygook, make up my own language to you. But if you can't understand, that's just feel good for me. I'm not making a difference. I have to communicate what I'm saying actually to the audience that I'm communicating it to. And the audience is not an abstraction. The audience is real individual people that compile up the audience or the imaginary audience that you're talking to. And that's important. That matters because people are coming at things from different angles and different groups of people. You can come at things from group angles, but the bigger you get, the more ambiguous it gets. And you can't speak everything to everyone. It's impossible. So this stuff matters. And when we are sitting trying to win arguments using logic and reason, which I'm a big fan of, I studied logic, I studied reason, I call people out on ad hominems and straw man attacks all day long when I hear them right.
False dichotomies are popular in these days.
Exactly. But when you have the relationship to win the person over through what I call deep civility or unconditional positive regard, you invite the same thing. And you don't just invite it in the person that you're in dialogue with. You invite it in everyone who's around that conversation mm-hmm. too, right? I can sit here and say, oh, freedom's so great because you're an idiot and I hate you, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to lose a large, significant portion of the audience that might have heard that but can't because they're turned off to my delivery. And it matters. It does. And the use of force or the use of name calling or mischaracterizing and stuff like that, jeez. It is a logical fallacy too.
Yeah.
You're not right because you can be more of a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good lesson that a lot of people, especially on social media, because you can hide behind your computer, but people aren't as bold or nasty in person. Some people are. A conversation sprang up. There's this girl that I went to high school with. We're in the same class. And it's, you know, it's kind of cool, but sometimes this is some work I need to do. Like all these people I went to high school with are all of a sudden becoming activists. And sometimes I have this thing where like, where the hell have you been? And you're not doing it right. You need to be doing this instead of that. I try to check that in myself, but she's more of a democratic socialist and she supports these candidates that are running in Austin, Travis County, so on and so forth. And we butt heads on stuff on, you know, economics especially, but we have that common ground. We have shared values when it comes to police accountability. And I try to be a good person and we'll engage one another. And it's always a productive conversation. And I feel like we both learn from it. And I'd go out of my way to congratulate her too. Like a couple of the candidates that she worked for and supported got elected. And they're not my kind of candidates, although they are on some issues. And I was like, hey, congrats, you did great work. Well, the other day she posted something and I went on and kind of engaged. It was like blaming the Trump or blaming somebody for all the economic problems. And I said, well, you got to really focus too on the mayors and the governors that did the lockdowns. That's why a lot of people are losing their homes right now because they locked down the economy. And these other people came on and were like, I can't believe you're still friends with this guy. And this guy's a total jerk. I was called a ghoul recently. And I'm always like trying to be kind through my communication. Well, someone else posted and said, honestly, I like watching this woman and John talk because it's civil and I feel like I learn from them. And that's what keeps me going because sometimes I'm like, what the hell am I doing debating with people on Facebook? There's so much more work to be done with the community that already agrees with freedom and then so on and so forth. But there's people that learn from a civil dialogue, which I think is still valuable. It's like the discourses, right? Like I think it was Aristotle that wrote, or was it Socrates that wrote about Aristotle? Which one of them came first? One of the student teacher thing. You probably know.
Socrates was the original OG.
Okay, but there was a dialogue that they wrote, and it was one person writing in a dialogue because that affords the opportunity for an argument, a counter argument, and when you know how to speak like a rational adult and not get all worked up, and you know that process, there can be a lot of magic. Not to bring up Hegel, but there is a thesis, an antithesis, and a synthesis. And that's really valuable. It's valuable for those in power because they leverage it, problem, reaction, solution. But it also doesn't have to be thesis or antithesis. There can be a synthesis. And one more thing to point out, something that's helped me to let go of that whole ego thing where I got to be right is understanding that our perception in large part creates our reality. And even people are like, well, 2 + 2 = 4. Well, like you were saying earlier, what if 2 + 2 actually equaled 3 or 5? Because you have 2 and 2 = 4, but you also have the fifth component, which is the sum. Does that make sense? Let me do it with 1 + 1 = 2. Does it? Or maybe it equals 3 because you still have the original one, but now you have the third, which is the sum of the two. Anyway, the point is
I could say 1 + 1 = 3. Like if you have one perspective and then you have another perspective and you take both of those principles simultaneously, mm-hmm. then to look at them at the same time without losing one creates a third.
Yeah.
So I think that's what you're saying.
Or if you have like the freedom cell thing, we got it from this guy, John David Garcia, that did this autopoiesis, which is a mm-hmm. biological thing that came about in the 1970s, this theory. Well, it was a name for a phenomenon that's always existed where there's like these self-replicating physical entities, biological entities, and then they recreate the same program to recreate themselves. Well, he has this process where these 8 people come together, they let their guard down, they communicate, and the 8 becomes 1. And so in that regard, you have 1, 2, 3, 8 units. You have that 8, but you also have 9 now because you have the whole, kind of referenced that earlier. But it's allowed me to be more accepting of other people's viewpoints, to understand that I have a viewpoint about something, they have a viewpoint about something. Both of them are equally valid because really it's in the eye of the beholder. And so that's like law of attraction. Like some people see this particular phenomenon this way. Some people see it this way. Like someone that's afraid of COVID, for example, when they see the report come out that it turns out that there's 10 times more cases than we originally thought. My worldview says, wow, that means that the fatality rate is much lower because more people have the case and we know the number of people that are dying. Other people see that and say, oh my God, the virus is more widespread. More people have it than we thought. Both of those viewpoints are equally valid. They're just coming from a different place. And if we can learn to honor and respect people's truth, then hopefully there'll be some reciprocity and we can find peace with one another.
Absolutely.
2 + 2 = 5.
There's a Frederick Douglass quote. Do you know it?
No.
Famous one. Says, I will unite with anybody to do right and nobody to do wrong. And it's a powerful distinction that I think you're talking about with the coalition that you formed, right? Which, like the First Step Act, was a coalition. It was a bipartisan effort. There's a lot of bipartisan efforts today. And they're done by groups or people.
Before.
Yeah, there's a lot fewer. But I think there's also like organizations like Americans for Prosperity who are embracing what they call policy coalition strategy. And this is a distinction between policy over politics. Mm-hmm. And so instead of finding someone that you align with on party, you find groups or individuals that you align with on a certain policy issue.
Yeah.
And what this enables you to do while everybody else is in a stalemate over their teams and camps is you can work with anybody to do good and you can advance a certain policy, even though neither one of you give up your position.
Yeah.
And so I believe a lot of people today think that you have to give up your position or sacrifice your integrity in order to get anything done. And it's just absolutely not true.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that we need to start shifting away from talking about, necessarily our party or our position and start talking about the policies. And we can always find common ground. Just like you and I, John, if we looked deep enough, I'm sure we would find plenty that you and I actually disagree on. And if you were my boogeyman and arch enemy and we looked deep enough, I'm pretty sure we could find something that we agree upon.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that policy aspect. I helped to start a political action committee over 10 years ago called Texans for Accountable Government. It's still around today. And one of the things that we focused on was this little catchphrase, humanize, harmonize, localize. And so the humanize was like to get out, make human relations, go meet your legislature, meet your neighbors. The harmonize was what you're talking about. It was build coalitions around common issues. And so we would work with left-leaning groups like the ACLU and the Texas Civil Rights Project against police accountability, for example, or privacy issues. And then we would work with conservative groups around fiscal responsibility homeschool rights, for example. And the magic is whenever we would bring together Libertarian Party, Democrat Party, Republican Party on the same token. Of course, we would also often get sabotaged by like the city attorney and stuff like that who work for themselves and their own interests. But I think that's an important thing to focus on in politics, but also in life in general. And then the localized, of course, was to bring things locally. We got like 5 minutes left. I want to wrap it up with an hour. So let's hit real quick on some of these comments. We'll try to do some rapid fire responses. Baster Fa 84 says, great message, guys. Can you tie into this debate on economic theory, especially capitalism? Capitalism is definitely one of those big dividing other things. And a lot of people are anti-capitalist these days, and they like to post about their anti-capitalist position on their smartphone, which is a wonderful tool that capitalism has created. But why don't you riff on that for a sec while I find another comment we can talk about?
So usually, what's the false choice? It's capitalism and what? Socialism?
I guess that would be the dichotomy, yeah.
If you actually talk to a socialist, which I do all the time. I live in the bleeding heart of Texas and Austin, and so I have plenty at my beck and call all the time. So I sat down and I talked to someone who's not a Democrat or a Democratic socialist, but a socialist, self-identified. And I asked, what exactly is the real issue with the millionaires and the billionaires paying their fair share and so on and so forth? And he said, you can't get there to $1 billion without exploiting people. Okay. I said, my God, that's how I feel about taxes. We're best friends. When you understand the people that you're talking to, it's a different conversation. It's like, so there's many of my neighbors are extremely left-leaning individuals who we disagree on plenty of things. But then, for example, most of them who work in alternative and complementary medicine, when it came to the Texas Medical Board and fighting to be able to see their patients directly without needing a referral from a primary care physician or something like that, or getting the ability to work and get licensure for the chiropractic or acupuncture community, oh, now they're all opposed to occupational licensing because it affects them directly. I think that when you can get to the point where people can relate to the experience and you can actually understand the people that you're talking to, it's not the same situation. And it's not the same false choice of it's either you're with us or you're with the terrorists. You're either with the capitalists or you're with the socialists. And for anybody who's pro-business, I would make a distinction between that and pro-market. Cronyism has been running capitalism for a long time. And so there is a lot of outrage for good reason, because there has been a lot of capitalism that's been in bed with corrupt politicians who's been investing in handouts and subsidies rather than innovating better products and services to improve people's lives. And that needs to be addressed too. And movements like conscious capitalism and stakeholder capitalism and some of the others are starting to emerge, are starting to address that. Yeah. I want you to leave with this. How much time do we have? 1 minute?
Let's do a couple more comments and then we'll close it down. I've always preferred voluntary exchange as a way to describe economic transactions as opposed to capitalism, although I think capitalism is great. And I'm a capitalist that invests in capital, takes risks in order to turn a profit. There's nothing wrong with that. But like you said, there can be cronyism. There can be the exploitation of resources. I don't think an employee-employer relationship is exploitative because it's voluntary and there's mutual benefit, but there's a lot of angst around money. Erica Gutierrez says, being respectful of others and speaking out of kindness and respect for yourself and other part usually neutralizes polarizations. A principle that is hard as the topics or issues are closer to the ego. What do you think the ego, what role do you think the ego plays in the difficulties we face when communicating with people that have a different opinion on stuff?
The ego acts like the CEO at a board meeting. So the CEO can't make all the decisions without all of the intel from everyone on the board who looks at different aspects of the business. They take the vote of the person who's negative. They take the vote of the person who's being positive. They take the people who disagree. They take all of the voices, and then they make an executive decision about what direction to go in. The ego acts like that. And not just with people outside. You have competing voices within yourself. Everybody does. And we need to realize that we're taking inventory of our internal voices. Why are we not taking inventory of external voices?
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. This guy Robin says, I disagree, there is a truth no matter what one thinks.
Is he saying, I disagree, there is a truth no matter what one thinks, or he disagrees?
Yeah, I think he's disagreeing with my perception informs reality bit. There's always this story that I like to tell to describe why I feel this way, right? And again, your truth is that you don't think that's legit, and that's okay. I'll honor that. My truth is that my perception creates my reality. And so I always share the story of when I lived in a converted school bus. And so we got this bus gifted to us, and it was in rough shape when we first got it. And it was a school bus, and I had two kids I was raising. And so we have the same object, this objective object, right, that can be described, and it can be, you can take a picture of it. It's a physical object. Maybe that doesn't change, right? But my perception of the object changed. So sometimes when I was feeling down and pessimistic, I thought to myself, man, I got to do better for my family. We're living in this school bus. We still have a lot of repairs to do on it and upgrades. It's not very comfortable. It's not what I want for my family. Oh, and I would get down on myself because of that perception of reality. Other times I would have an alternate view of the same school bus in that, wow, this is such a great opportunity for me and my family. We can travel the country together. Our home literally can move wherever we want it to. Not to mention, we don't have to pay rent. We own our own home without even having to pay anything in the first place. This is a great place to be. So depending on what my perception was the school bus, my reality changed completely to where the reality of the school bus could be this burden and something that makes me feel inadequate as a father, or the school bus could be something that's adventurous and I could take my children around the country and teach them, and we have the freedom to own our own home, not having rent or having a mortgage. And so same school bus, two different truths around the same school bus that I experienced. And I think about that when people are saying stuff to me and they have their own perception of reality. And for me to discount that, I think is not fair to them.
So part of the story that I want to, the message that I would like to share here and leave you guys with at some point is that this doesn't have to be a tragedy. It actually could be a comedy or a romance. And that really depends on how you approach it. And so what John's hitting on is very important. You can climb a mountain, and that mountain can be, you can climb it with somebody who's complaining the whole time, or you can climb it with somebody who is absolutely euphoric and is having a religious experience of getting to the peak. Same mountain, two different experiences of it. And I believe today that we are coming to a crossroads where the risk of blossoming is becoming less than the risk of remaining in a bud. And so humanity has been stuck at this point with this strategy of trying to dehumanize and objectify so we can dominate and submit the other for a long time. Right at this point, I think out of the muck of the Nile can come the blue lotus, something incredibly beautiful. The swans fight, actually, when they go to mate before they kind of figure out what they're doing. And it's very possible that today we're coming to a sort of awakening, a maturation, which the psychoanalytical literature sometimes suggests is like a mature form of relationship or love, where you have a real sense of togetherness and unity that develops, where neither point give up their integrity, right? And so instead of the codependent relationship where there's always somebody who gives up or sacrifices themselves or integrity, this is one where both points remain, and yet there is fusion. And I think this is really critical and key, that we've got to find a way to make this all work. The stories that we are just isolated islands and encapsulated individuals alone in the world is a half truth. And the story that we're all one and we're just a mass and we're just man, the collective, is also a half truth. There is independence and there is interdependence. And until we can recognize both of these stories, traditionally embraced by socialists, the interdependence and solidarity part, and capitalists, the independence and freedom part, until we recognize both of these principles, I don't think we can create or even imagine how we could create the kind of world that's going to be necessary to transcend the level of thinking that's creating our present problems.
Well said.
So I thank you guys for being here. I thank you for listening. I want you to know that your work is my work. And so I thank you for doing it. Thank you for having me on, John.
Yeah, thanks.
And thank you, Derek Bros, for helping us connect up to your podcast.
At D Bros Live Free. All right, this has been a great, enlightening conversation. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to this channel. You can subscribe to my personal channel. There's links there. And I have a podcast. The podcast version of this will be released as well, livefreenow.show. And just a final note, everything that we've talked about is extremely important because it kind of lays the foundation of how things proceed. And I want to encourage people to be conscious of the fact that we're all infinitely powerful human beings. So we don't have to just sit back and be a party to how the future plays out. We can play an active role in how it plays out. And it's up to each and every one of us to embrace that and to share the message that we had here today, one of unity rather than division. And peace and freedom. Thanks a lot, Nick.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye.